fierce pain shot through his thigh and hip. Geralt clenched his teeth. He saw above him billions of stars. So close, it seemed, he could reach out and touch them. Right above his head, just above the treetops. As he walked, he picked his way in order to stay away from the light, away from the glow of bonfires, in order to remain within the compass of rippling shadow. It was not easy. Pyres of fir logs were burning all around, sending into the sky a red glow shot with the flashes of sparks, marking the darkness with brighter pennants of smoke, crackling, exploding in a blaze among the figures dancing all around. Geralt stopped to let through a frenzied procession, boisterous and wild, which was barring his way and lurching towards him. Someone tugged him by the arm, trying to shove into his hand a wooden beer mug dripping with foam. He declined and, gently but firmly, pushed away the man, who was staggering and splashing beer all around from the small cask he was carrying under one arm. Geralt did not want to drink. Not on a night like this. Close by, on a frame of birch poles towering above a huge fire, the fair-haired May-king, dressed in a wreath and coarse breeches, was kissing the red-haired May-queen, groping her breasts through her thin, sweat-soaked blouse. The monarch was more than a little drunk, and tottered, trying to keep his balance as he hugged the queen, pressing a fist clamped onto a mug of beer against her back. The queen, also far from sober, wearing a wreath which had slipped down over her eyes, hung on the king's neck and leaned close against him in anticipation. The throng was dancing beneath the frame, singing, yelling and shaking poles festooned with garlands of foliage and blossom.
"Beltane!"
screamed a short young woman right in Geralt's ear, pulling him by the sleeve. She forced him to turn around among the procession encircling them. She cavorted by him, fluttering her skirt and shaking her hair, which was full of flowers. He let her spin him in the dance and whirled around, nimbly avoiding the other couples.
"Beltane! Mayday Eve!"
Besides them there was a struggle, a squealing, and the nervous laugh of another young woman, feigning a fight and resistance, being carried off by a young man into the darkness, beyond the circle of light. The procession, hooting, snaked between the burning pyres. Someone stumbled and fell, breaking the chain of hands, rending the procession apart into smaller groups. The young woman, looking at Geralt from under the leaves decorating her brow, came closer and pressed herself urgently against him, encircling him with her arms and panting. He grabbed her more roughly than he had intended and felt the hot dampness of her body, perceptible on his hands through the thin linen pressing against her back. She raised her head. Her eyes were closed and her teeth flashed from beneath her raised, twisted upper lip. She smelled of sweat and sweet grass, smoke and lust. Why not, he thought, crumpling her dress and kneading her back with his hands, enjoying the damp, steaming warmth on his fingers. The woman was not his type. She was too small and too plump. Under his hand, he felt the line where the too tight bodice of her dress was cutting into her body, dividing her back into two distinctly perceptible curves where he should not have been able to feel them. Why not, he thought, on a night like this, after all? It means nothing. Beltane. Fires as far as the horizon. Beltane. Mayday Eve. The nearest pyre devoured the dry, outstretched pine branches being thrown onto it with a crack, erupted in a golden flash, lighting everything up. The young woman's eyes opened wide, looking up into his face. He heard her suck air in, felt her tense up and violently push her hands against his chest. He released her at once. She hesitated, tilted her trunk away to the length of her almost straightened arms, but she did not peel her hips away from his thighs. She lowered her head, then withdrew her hands and drew away, looking to the side. They stood motionless for a moment, until the returning procession barged into them, shook and jostled them again. The young woman quickly turned and fled, clumsily trying to join the dancers. She looked back, just once. Beltane. What am I doing here? A star shone in the dark, sparkling, drawing his gaze. The medallion around the witch's neck vibrated. Geralt involuntarily dilated his pupils, his vision effortlessly penetrating the obscurity. She was not a peasant woman. Peasant women did not wear black velvet cloaks. Peasant women carried or dragged into the bushes by men, screamed, giggled, squirmed and tensed their bodies like trout being pulled out of the water. None of them gave the impression that it was they who were leading their tall, fair-haired swains with gaping shirts into the gloom. Peasant women never wore velvet ribbons or diamond-encrusted stars of obsidian around their necks. Yennefer. Wide open, violet eyes blazing in a pale, triangular face.
Geralt.
She released the hand of the fair-haired cherub, whose breast was shiny as a sheet of copper with sweat. The lad staggered, tottered, fell to his knees, rolled his head, looked around and blinked. He stood up slowly, glanced at them uncomprehending and embarrassed, and then lurched off towards the bonfires. The sorceress did not even glance at him. She looked intently at the witcher, and her hand tightly clenched the edge of her cloak.
"Nice to see you," he said easily.
He immediately sensed the tension which had formed between them falling away.
"Indeed,"
she smiled. He seemed to detect something affected in the smile, but he could not be certain.
"Quite a pleasant surprise, I don't deny. What are you doing here, Geralt? Oh, excuse me, forgive my indiscretion. Of course, we're doing the same thing. It's Beltane, after all. Only you caught me, so to speak, in flagrante delicto."
"I interrupted you."
"I'll survive," she laughed. "The night is young. I'll enchant another if the fancy takes me."
"Pity I'm unable to do that," he said,
trying hard to affect indifference.
"A moment ago, a girl saw my eyes in the light and fled."
"At dawn," she said, smiling more and more falsely. "When they really let themselves go, they won't pay any attention. You'll find another. Just you wait."
"Yen."
The rest of the words stuck in his throat. They looked at one another for a long, long time, and the red reflection of fire flickered on their faces. Yennefer suddenly sighed, veiling her eyes with her eyelashes.
"Geralt, no. Don't let's start."
"It's Beltane," he interrupted. "Have you forgotten?"
She moved slowly closer, placed her hands on his arms, and slowly and cautiously snuggled against him, touching his chest with her forehead. He stroked her raven-black hair, strewn in locks coiled like snakes.
"Believe me," she whispered, lifting her head. "I wouldn't think twice if it were only to be... But it's senseless. Everything will start again and finish like last time. It would be senseless if we were to..."
"Does everything have to make sense? It's Beltane."
"Beltane?"
She turned her head.
"What of it?" "Something drew us to these bonfires, to these people enjoying themselves. We meant to dance, abandon ourselves, get a little intoxicated, and take advantage of the annual loosening of morals, which is inextricably linked to the celebration of the endless natural cycle. And prithee, we run right into each other after... How long has passed since... A year?"
"1 year. 2 months and 18 days.
"How touching. Was that deliberate?"
"It was."
"Yen..." "Geralt,"
she interrupted, suddenly moving away and tossing her head.
"Let me make things perfectly clear. I don't want to."
He nodded to indicate that was sufficiently clear. Yennefer threw her cloak back over one shoulder. Beneath her cloak, she had on a very thin white blouse and a black skirt girdled with a belt of silver links.
"I don't want," she repeated, "to start again. And the thought of doing with you... what I meant to do with that young blonde boy. According to the same rules. The thought, Geralt, seems to me somewhat improper. An affront to both of us. Do you understand?"
He nodded once more. She looked at him from beneath lowered eyelashes.
"Will you go?"
"No."
She was silent for a moment, fidgeting nervously.
"Are you angry?"
"No."
"Right. Come on. Let's sit down somewhere away from this hubbub. Let's talk for a while. because, as you can see, I'm glad we've met, truly. Let's sit together for a while, all right?
Let us, Yen.
They headed off into the gloom, far onto the moors, towards the black wall of trees, avoiding couples locked in embraces. They had to go a long way in order to find a secluded spot. A dry hilltop marked by a juniper bush as slender as a cypress. The sorceress unfastened the brooch from her cloak, shook it out and spread it on the ground. He sat down beside her. He wanted to embrace her very much, but contrariness stopped him. Yennefer tidied up her deeply unbuttoned blouse, looked at him penetratingly, sighed, and embraced him. He might have expected it. She had to make an effort to read his mind, but sensed his intentions involuntarily. They said nothing.
"Oh, damn it,"
she suddenly said, pulling away. She raised her hand and cried out a spell. Red and green spheres flew above their heads, breaking up high in the air, forming colourful, fluffy flowers. Laughter and joyous cries drifted up from the bonfires.
"Beltane," she said bitterly. "May Day Eve. The cycle repeats. Let them enjoy themselves, if they can."
There were other sorcerers in the vicinity. In the distance, three orange lightning bolts shot into the sky, and away over by the forest, a veritable geyser of rainbow-coloured, whirling meteors exploded. The people by the bonfires gave awestruck gasps and cried out. Geralt, tense, stroked Yennefer's curls and breathed in the scent of lilac and gooseberry they gave off.
"If I desire her too intensely," he thought, "she'll sense it, and she'll be put off. Her hackles will rise, she'll bristle and spurn me. I'll ask her calmly how she's doing."
"Nothing to report,"
she said, and something in her voice quavered.
"Nothing worth mentioning."
"Don't do that to me, Yen. Don't read me. It unsettles me."
"Forgive me, it's automatic. And what's new with you, Geralt?"
"Nothing. Nothing worth mentioning."
They said nothing.
"Beltane!"
she suddenly snapped, and he felt the arm she was pressing against his chest stiffen and tauten.
"They're enjoying themselves. They're celebrating the eternal cycle of nature regenerating itself. And us? What are we doing here? We relicts, doomed to obliteration, to extinction and oblivion. Nature is born again. The cycle repeats itself, but not for us, Geralt. We cannot reproduce ourselves. We were deprived of that potential. We were given the ability to do extraordinary things with nature, occasionally literally against her. And at the same time, what is most natural and simple in nature was taken from us. What if we live longer than them? After our winter will come the spring, and we shall not be reborn. What finishes will finish along with us. But both you and I are drawn to those bonfires, though our presence here is a wicked, blasphemous mockery of this world."
He was silent. He didn't like it when she fell into a mood like this, the origin of which he knew only too well. Once again, he thought, once again it's beginning to torment her. There was a time when it seemed she had forgotten, that she had become reconciled to it like the others. He embraced her, hugged her, rocked her very gently like a child. She let him. It didn't surprise him. He knew she needed it.
"You know, Geralt," she suddenly said, now composed, "I miss your silence the most."
He touched her hair and ear with his mouth.
"I desire you, Yen," he thought. "I desire you, but you know that. You know that, don't you, Yen?"
"Yes, I do," she whispered.
"Yen," she sighed again.
"Just today," she said, looking at him with eyes wide open. "Just this night, which will soon slip away. Let it be our Beltane. We shall part in the morning. Don't expect any more. I cannot. I could not. Forgive me if I have hurt you. Kiss me and go away.
If I kiss you, I won't go away.
I was counting on that.
She tilted her head. He touched her parted lips with his own, tentatively. First the upper, then the lower. He entwined his fingers in her winding locks, touched her ear, her diamond earring, her neck. Yennefer, returning the kiss, clung to him, and her nimble fingers quickly and surely unfastened the buckles of his jacket. She fell back onto her cloak, spread out on the soft moss. He pressed his mouth to her breast and felt the nipple harden and press against the very fine stuff of her blouse. She was breathing shallowly.
Yen, don't say anything. Please.
The touch of her naked, smooth, cool skin electrified his fingers and his palms, a shiver down his back being pricked by her fingernails. From the bonfires, screams, singing, a whistle, a far distant cloud of sparks in purple smoke. Caresses and touches. He touching her. She touching him. A shiver. And impatience. The gliding skin of her slim thighs gripping his hips, drawing closed like a clasp. Beltane. Breathing, riven into gasps. Flashes beneath their eyelids, the scent of lilac and gooseberry. The May Queen and May King. A blasphemous mockery. Oblivion. Beltane, May Day Eve. A moan, hers, his. Black curls on his eyes, on his mouth, intertwined fingers, quivering hands, a cry. Hers, black eyelashes, a moan, his. Silence, all eternity in the silence. Beltane, fires all the way to the horizon.
Yen?
Oh, Geralt.
Yen, are you weeping?
No. Yen, I promised myself, I promised.
Don't say anything. There's no need. Aren't you cold?
Yes, I am.
And now?
Now I'm warmer.
The sky grew lighter at an alarming rate. The contours of the black wall of trees becoming more prominent, the distinct, serrated line of the treetops emerging from the shapeless gloom. The blue, foretoken of dawn, creeping up from behind it, spread along the horizon, extinguishing the lamps of the stars. It had grown cooler. He hugged her more tightly and covered her with his cloak.
Geralt.
Hmm?
It'll soon be dawn.
I know.
Have I hurt you?
A little.
Will it begin again?
It never ended.
Please. You make me feel...
Don't say anything. Everything is all right.
The smell of smoke creeping among the heather. The scent of lilac and gooseberry.
Geralt?
Yes?
Do you remember when we met in the Owl Mountains? And that golden dragon, what was he called?
Three Jackdaws. Yes, I do.
He told us.
I remember, Yen.
She kissed him where the neck becomes the collarbone, and then nuzzled her head in, tickling him with her hair.
We are made for each other,
she whispered.
Perhaps we're destined for each other. But nothing will come of it. It's a pity. But when dawn breaks, we shall part. It cannot be any other way. We have to part so as not to hurt one another. We too, destined for each other, created for each other. Pity. The one or ones who created us for each other ought to have made more of an effort. Destiny alone is insufficient. It's too little. Something more is needed. Forgive me. I had to tell you.
I know.
I knew it was senseless for us to make love.
You're wrong. It wasn't. In spite of everything.
Ride to Sintra, Geralt.
What?
Ride to Sintra. Ride there, and this time don't give up. Don't do what you did then, when you were there.
How did you know?
I know everything about you. Have you forgotten? Ride to Sintra. Go there as fast as you can. Fell times are approaching, Geralt. Very fell. You cannot be late. Yen, please don't say anything.
It was cooler. Cooler and cooler, and lighter and lighter.
Don't go yet. Let's wait until the dawn.
Yes, let's.
Chapter 4.
Don't move, sir. I must change your dressing. The wound is getting messy, and your leg is swelling something terrible. Oh, ye gods, it looks hideous. We must find a doctor as fast as we can.
Fuck the doctor, the witcher groaned. Hand me the chest, Jurga. Yes, that flacon there. Pour it straight onto the wound. Oh, bloody hell. It's nothing, nothing. Keep pouring. Oh, right. Bandage it up well and cover me.
It's swollen, sir, the whole thigh. And you're burning with fever.
Fuck the fever. Jurga.
Yes, sir?
I forgot to thank you.
It's not you who should be doing the thanking, sir, but me. You saved my life. You suffered an injury in my defence. And me? What did I do? I bandaged a wounded man who'd fainted away and put him on my cart and didn't leave him to expire. It's an ordinary matter, Witcher, sir.
It's not so ordinary, Jurga. I've been left in similar situations. Like a dog.
The merchant, lowering his head, said nothing.
Well, what can I say? It's a base world, he finally muttered. But that's no reason for us all to become despicable. What we need is kindness. My father taught me that, and I teach it to my sons.
The witcher was silent, and observed the branches of the trees above the road, sliding past as the cart went on. His thigh throbbed. He felt no pain.
Where are we?
We forded the River Traver. Now we're in the Ground Cherry Forests. It's no longer Temeria, but Sodden.
You were asleep when we crossed the border, when the customs officers were rummaging in the cart.
I'll tell you, though, they were astonished by you. But their senior officer knew you and ordered us through without delay.
He knew me.
Aye, there's no doubt. He called you Geralt. That's what he said. Geralt of Rivia. Is that your name?
It is.
And he promised to send a man ahead with the tidings that a doctor is needed. And I gave him a little something, so as he wouldn't forget.
Thank you, Jurga.
No, Witcher, sir. I've already said it's me as thanks you. And not just that. I'm also in your debt. We have an agreement. What is it, sir? Are you feeling faint?
Jurga, the flacon with the green seal.
Sir, you'll stop. You were calling out dreadfully in your sleep.
I must. Jurga.
As you wish. Wait. I'll pour it into a bowl right away. Oh, by the gods, we need a doctor as quickly as possible, otherwise...
The witcher turned his head away. He heard the cries of children playing in a dried-up inner moat surrounding the castle grounds. There were around 10 of them. The youngsters were making an ear-splitting din, out-shouting each other in shrill, excited voices, which kept breaking into falsetto. They were running to and fro along the bottom of the moat, like a shoal of swift little fishes, unexpectedly and very quickly changing direction, but always staying together. As usual, behind the screeching older boys, as skinny as scarecrows, ran a little child, panting and quite incapable of catching up.
There are plenty of them, the witcher observed.
Mousak smiled sourly, tugging at his beard and shrugged.
Aye, plenty. And which of them? Which of these boys is the celebrated child of destiny?
The druid looked away.
I am forbidden, Geralt. Calanthe. Of course. You cannot have deluded yourself that she would give the child up so easily. You have met her, after all. She is a woman of iron. I shall tell you something. something I ought not to say, in the hope that you'll understand. I hope, too, that you will not betray me before her.
Speak.
When the child was born 6 years ago, she summoned me and ordered me to cheat you and kill it.
You refused.
No one refuses Calanthe, Marsex said, looking him straight in the eyes. I was prepared to take to the road when she summoned me once again. She retracted the order without a word of explanation.
Be cautious when you talk to her.
I shall, Malsak.
Tell me, what happened to Duni and Pavetta?
They were sailing from Skellige to Sintra. They were surprised by a storm. Not a single splinter was found of the ship.
Geralt,
that the child was not with them is an incredibly queer matter. Inexplicable. They were meant to take it with them, but at the last moment did not. No one knows why. Pavetta could never be parted from. How did Calanthe bear it?
What do you think?
Of course. Shrieking like a band of goblins, the boys hurtled upwards and flashed beside them. Geralt noticed that not far behind the head of the rushing herd hurried a little girl, as thin and clamorous as the boys, only with a fair plait waving behind her. Howling wildly, the band spilled down the moat's steep slope again. At least half of them, including the girl, slid down on their behinds. The smallest one, still unable to keep up, fell over, rolled down to the bottom, and began crying loudly, clutching a grazed knee. The other boys surrounded him, jeering and mocking, and then ran on. The little girl knelt by the little boy, hugged him, and wiped away his tears, smudging dust and dirt over his face.
Let us go, Geralt. The queen awaits. Let's go, Marsak.
Calanthe was sitting on a large bench, suspended on chains from the bough of a huge linden tree. She appeared to be dozing, but that was belied by an occasional push of her foot to swing the bench every now and again. There were three young women with her. One of them was sitting on the grass beside the swing, her spread-out dress shining bright white against the green, like a patch of snow. The other two were not far away, chatting as they cautiously pulled apart the branches on some raspberry bushes.
"Ma'am,"
Marsak bowed. The queen raised her head. Geralt went down on one knee.
"Witcher," she said dryly.
As in the past, she was decorated with emeralds, which matched her green dress and the colour of her eyes. As in the past, she was wearing a narrow gold band on her mousy hair. But her hands, which he remembered as white and slender, were less slender now. She had gained weight.
"Greetings, Calanthe of Sintra."
"Welcome, Geralt of Rivia. Rise. I've been waiting for you. Marsak, my friend, escort the young ladies back to the castle."
"At your behest, Your Majesty."
They were left alone.
"6 years," began Calanthe unsmilingly. "You are horrifyingly punctual, Witcher."
He did not comment.
"There were moments, what am I saying, years, when I convinced myself that you would forget, or that other reasons would prevent you from coming. No, I did not in principle wish misfortune on you, but I had to take into consideration the none too safe nature of your profession. They say that death dogs your footsteps, Geralt of Rivia, but that you never look back. And later, when Pavetta..."
"Do you know?"
"I do."
Geralt bowed his head.
"I sympathize with all my heart."
"No,"
she interrupted.
"It was long ago. I no longer wear mourning, as you see. I did for long enough. Pavetta and Duni, destined for each other, until the very end. How can one not believe in the power of destiny?"
They were both silent. Calanthe moved her foot and set the swing in motion again.
"And so the Witcher has returned after 6 years, as agreed,"
she said slowly, and a strange smile bloomed on her face.
"He has returned and demands the fulfillment of the oath. Do you think, Geralt, that storytellers will tell of our meeting in this way when 100 years have passed? I think so. Except they will probably colour a tale, tug on heartstrings, play on the emotions. Yes, they know how. I can imagine it. Please listen. And the cruel Witcher speak thus, 'Fulfill your vow, O Queen, or my curse shall fall on you. and the queen, weeping fulsomely, fell on her knees before the witcher, crying, "Have mercy! Do not take the child from me! It is all I have left!"
"Calanthe, don't interrupt!" she said sharply.
"I'm telling a story, haven't you noticed? Listen on." The evil, cruel witcher stamped his foot, waved his arms and cried, "Beware, faithless one, beware of fate's vengeance. If you do not keep your vow, you will never escape punishment." And the queen replied, "Very well, witcher, let it be as fate wishes it. Look over there, where 10 children are frolicking. Choose the one destined to you, and you shall take it as your own, and leave me with a broken heart."
The witcher said nothing.
In the story,
Calanthe's smile became more and more ugly.
The queen, I presume, would let the witcher guess thrice. But we aren't in a story, Geralt. We are here in reality, you and I, and our problem, and our destiny. It isn't a fairy story. It's real life. Lousy, evil, onerous, not sparing of errors, harm, sorrow, disappointments or misfortunes. Not sparing of anyone. Neither witches nor queens. Which is why, Geralt of Rivia, you will have only one guess.
The witcher still said nothing.
"Just one single attempt,"
Calanthe repeated.
"But as I said, this is not a fairy tale but life, which we must fill with moments of happiness for ourselves, for, as you know, we cannot count on fate to smile on us. Which is why, irrespective of the result of your choice, you will not leave here with nothing. You will take one child, the one you choose. A child you will turn into a witcher, assuming the child survives the trial of the grasses, naturally."
Geralt jerked up his head. The queen smiled. He knew that smile, hideous and evil, contemptuous because it did not conceal its artificiality.
"You are astonished," she stated. "Well, I've studied a little. Since Pavetta's child had the chance of becoming a witcher, I went to great pains. My sources, Geralt, reveal nothing, however, regarding how many children in 10 withstand the trial of the grasses. Would you like to satisfy my curiosity on this regard?"
"Oh, queen," Geralt said, clearing his throat. "You certainly went to sufficient pains in your studies to know that the code and my oath forbid me from even uttering that name, much less discussing it."
Calanthe stopped the swing abruptly by jabbing a heel into the ground.
"3, at most 4 in 10,
she said, nodding her head in feigned pensiveness.
"A stringent selection, very stringent, I'd say, and at every stage. First the choice, and then the trials, and then the changes. How many youngsters ultimately receive medallions and silver swords? 1 in 10? 1 in 20?
The witcher said nothing.
"I've pondered long over this," Calanthe continued, now without a smile, "and I've come to the conclusion that the selection of the children at the stage of the choice has scant significance. What difference does it make in the end, Geralt, which child dies or goes insane, stuffed full of narcotics? What difference does it make whose brain bursts from hallucinations, whose eyes rupture and gush forth instead of becoming cat's eyes? What difference does it make whether the child destiny chose or an utterly chance one dies in its own blood and puke? Answer me!"
The witcher folded his arms on his chest in order to control their trembling.
"What's the point of this?" he asked. "Are you expecting an answer?"
"You're right, I'm not."
The queen smiled again.
"As usual, you're quite correct in your deductions. Who knows, perhaps even though I'm not expecting an answer, I would like benignly to devote a little attention to your frank words, freely volunteered. Words which, who knows, perhaps you would like to unburden yourself of, and along with them, whatever is oppressing your soul. But if not, too bad. Come on, let's get down to business. We must supply the storytellers with material. Let's go and choose a child, witcher."
"Calanthe," he said, looking her in the eyes. "It's not worth worrying about storytellers. If they don't have enough material, they'll make things up anyway. And if they do have authentic material at their disposal, they'll distort it. As you correctly observed, this isn't a fairy tale. It's life, lousy and evil. And so, Damn it all, let's live it decently and well. Let's keep the amount of harm done to others to the absolute minimum. In a fairy tale, I grant you, the Queen has to beg the Witcher, and the Witcher can demand what's his and stamp his foot. In real life, the Queen can simply say, "Please don't take the child," and the Witcher can reply, "Since you ask, I shall not," and go off into the setting sun. Such is life. But the storyteller wouldn't get a penny from his listeners for an ending to a fairy tale like that. At most, they'd get a kick up the arse, because it's dull. Calanthe stopped smiling, and something he had seen once before flashed in her eyes. "What?" she hissed. "Let's not beat about the bush, Calanthe. You know what I mean. As I came here, so shall I leave. Should I choose a child? Why would I need one? Do you think it matters so much to me that I came here to Sintra, driven by an obsession to take your grandchild away from you? No, Calanthe. I wanted, perhaps, to see this child, look destiny in the eyes, for I don't know myself. But don't be afraid. I shan't take it. All you have to do is ask." Calanthe sprang up from the bench, and a green flame blazed in her eyes. "Ask!" she hissed furiously. "Me afraid of you? I should be afraid of you, you accursed sorcerer. How dare you fling your scornful pity in my face, revile me with your compassion, accuse me of cowardice, challenge my will? My over-familiarity has emboldened you. Beware." The Witcher decided not to shrug, concluding it would be safer to genuflect and bow his head. He was not mistaken. "Well?" Calanthe hissed, standing over him. Her hands were lowered, clenched into fists bristling with rings. "Well, at last, that is the right response. One answers a queen from such a position when a queen asks one a question. And if it is not a question, but an order, one bows one's head even lower and goes off to carry it out without a moment's delay. Is that clear?" "Yes, O Queen." "Splendid. Now stand up." He stood up. She gazed at him and bit her lip. "Did my outburst offend you very much? I refer to the form, not the content."
"Not especially."
"Good. I shall try not to flare up again. And so, as I was saying, 10 children are playing in the moat. You will choose the one you regard as the most suitable. You will take it and, by the gods, make a witcher of it, because that is what destiny expects. And if not destiny, then know that I expect it." He looked her in the eyes and bowed low.
"O Queen," he said, "6 years ago, I proved to you that some things are more powerful than a queen's will. By the gods, if such exist, I shall prove that to you one more time. You will not compel me to make a choice I do not wish to make. I apologize for the form, but not the content."
"I have deep dungeons beneath the castle. I warn you, 1 second more, 1 word more, and you will rot in them."
"None of the children playing in the moat is fit to be a witcher," he said slowly, "and Pavetta's son is not among them."
Calanthe squinted her eyes. He did not even shudder.
"Come,"
she finally said, turning on her heel. He followed her among rows of flowering shrubs, among flowering beds and hedges. The Queen entered an openwork summer house. 4 large wicker chairs stood around a malachite table. A pitcher and 2 silver goblets stood on the veined tabletop, supported by 4 legs in the shape of griffins.
"Be seated and pour."
She drank to him, vigorously, lustily, like a man. He responded in kind, remaining standing.
"Be seated," she repeated. "I wish to talk."
"Yes, ma'am."
"How did you know Pavetta's son is not among the children in the moat?"
"I didn't."
Geralt decided to be frank.
"It was a shot in the dark."
"Aha, I might have guessed. And that none of them is fit to be a witcher. Is that true? And how were you able to tell that? Were you aided by magic?"
"Calanthe," he said softly, "I did not have to state it or find it out. What you said earlier contained the whole truth. Every child is fit. Selection decides. Later."
"By the gods of the sea, as my permanently absent husband would say." She laughed. "So, nothing is true.
The whole lore of surprise. Those legends about children that somebody was not expecting, and about the ones who were first encountered. I suspected as much. It's a game. A game with chance. A game with destiny. But it's an awfully dangerous game, Geralt.
I know.
A game based on somebody's suffering. Why then, answer me, are parents or guardians forced to make such difficult and burdensome vows? Why are children taken from them? After all, there are plenty of children around who don't need to be taken away from anybody. Entire packs of homeless children and orphans roam the roads. One can buy a child cheaply enough in any village. Every peasant is happy to sell one during the hunger gap, but why worry when he can easily sire another? Why then? Why did you force an oath on Dooney, on Pavetta and on me? Why have you turned up here exactly 6 years after the birth of the child? And why, damn it, don't you want one? Why do you say it's of no use? He was silent. Calanthe nodded. You do not reply, she said, leaning back in her chair. Let's ponder on the reason for your silence. Logic is the mother of all knowledge. And what does she hint at? What do we have here? A witcher searching for destiny concealed in the strange and doubtful law of surprise. The witcher finds his destiny and suddenly gives it up. He claims not to want the child of destiny. His face is stony, ice and metal in his voice. He judges that a queen, a woman, when all said and done, may be tricked, deceived by the appearances of hard maleness. No, Geralt, I shall not spare you. I know why you are declining the choice of a child. You are quitting because you do not believe in destiny, because you are not certain, and you, when you are not certain, you begin to fear. Yes, Geralt, what leads you is fear. You are afraid. Deny that.
He slowly put the goblet down on the table, slowly, so that the clink of silver against malachite would not betray the uncontrollable shaking of his hand.
You do not deny it.
No.
She quickly leaned forward and seized his arm tightly.
You have gained in my eyes, she said, and smiled.
It was a pretty smile. Against his will, almost certainly against his will, he responded with a smile.
How did you arrive at that, Calanthe?
I arrived at nothing, she said, without releasing his arm. It was a shot in the dark.
They both burst out laughing, and then sat in silence among the greenery and the scent of wild cherry blossom, among the warmth and the buzzing of bees.
Geralt.
Yes, Calanthe.
Don't you believe in destiny?
I don't know if I believe in anything. And as regards, I fear it isn't enough. Something more is necessary.
I must ask you something. What happened to you? I mean, you were reputedly a child of destiny yourself. Mausak claims...
No, Calanthe. Mausak was thinking about something completely different. Mausak, he probably knows, but he uses those convenient myths when it suits him. It's not true that I was an unexpected encounter at home as a child. That's not how I became a witcher. I'm a commonplace foundling, Calanthe. The unwanted bastard of a woman I don't remember. But I know who she is.
The Queen looked at him penetratingly, but the Witcher did not continue.
Are all stories about the Laura Surprise myths?
Yes, it's hard to call an accident destiny.
But you Witchers do not stop searching.
No, we don't. But it's senseless. Nothing has any point.
Do you believe a child of destiny would pass through the trials without danger?
We believe such a child would not require the trials.
One question, Geralt. Quite a personal one. May I?
He nodded.
There is no better way to pass on hereditary traits than the natural way, as we know. You went through the trials and survived. So, if you need a child with special qualities and endurance, why don't you find a woman who... I'm tactless, aren't I? But I think I've guessed, haven't I?
As usual, he said, smiling sadly. You are correct in your deductions, Calanthe. You guessed right, of course. What you're suggesting is impossible for me.
Forgive me, she said,
and the smile vanished from her face.
Oh, well, it's a human thing.
It isn't human.
Ah. So, no witcher can...
No. None. The trial of the grasses, Calanthe, is dreadful. And what is done to boys during the time of the changes is even worse, and irreversible.
Don't start feeling sorry for yourself, she muttered, because it ill behooves you. It doesn't matter what was done to you. I can see the results. Quite satisfactory, if you ask me. If I could assume that Pavetta's child would one day be similar to you, I wouldn't hesitate for a moment.
The risks are too great, he said quickly. As you said, at most, 4 out of 10 survive.
Damn it, is only the trial of the grasses hazardous? Do only potential witches take risks? Life is full of hazards. Selection also occurs in life, Geralt. Misfortune, sicknesses and wars also select. Defying destiny may be just as hazardous as succumbing to it. Geralt, I would give you the child, but I'm afraid too.
I wouldn't take the child. I couldn't assume the responsibility. I wouldn't agree to burden you with it. I wouldn't want the child to tell you one day, as I'm telling you.
Do you hate that woman, Geralt?
My mother? No, Calanthe. I presume she had a choice, or perhaps she didn't. No, but she did. A suitable spell or elixir would have been sufficient. A choice. A choice which should be respected, for it is the holy and irrefutable right of every woman. Emotions are unimportant here. She had the irrefutable right to her decision, and she took it. But I think that an encounter with her, the face she would make then, would give me something of a perverse pleasure, if you know what I mean.
I know perfectly well what you mean, she smiled. But you have slim chances of enjoying such a pleasure. I cannot judge your age, Witcher, but I suppose you're much, much older than your appearance would indicate. So that woman, he interrupted coldly, probably looks much, much younger than I do now. A sorceress?
Yes.
Interesting. I thought sorceresses couldn't.
She probably thought so too.
Yes. But you're right. Let's not discuss a woman's rights to this decision, because it is a matter beyond debate. Let us return to our problem. You will not take the child. Definitely.
Definitely.
And if destiny is not merely a myth, if it really exists, doesn't a fear arise that it may backfire?
If it backfires, it'll backfire on me, he answered placidly, for I am the one acting against it. You, after all, have carried out your side of the bargain. For if destiny isn't a myth, I would have to choose the appropriate child among the ones you have shown me. But is Pavetta's child among those children?
Yes. Calanthe slowly nodded her head. Would you like to see it? Would you like to gaze into the eyes of destiny?
No. No, I don't. I quit. I renounce it. I renounce my right to the boy. I don't want to look destiny in the eyes, because I don't believe in it. Because I know that in order to unite two people, destiny is insufficient. Something more is necessary than destiny. I sneer at such destiny. I won't follow it like a blind man, being led by the hand, uncomprehending and naive. This is my irrevocable decision, O Calanthe of Cintra.
The Queen stood up. She smiled. He was unable to guess what lay behind her smile.
Let it be thus, Geralt of Rivia. Perhaps your destiny was precisely to renounce it and quit. I think that's exactly what it was, for you should know that if you had chosen correctly, you would see that the destiny you mock has been sneering at you.
He looked into her glaring green eyes. She smiled. He could not decipher the smile. There was a rosebush growing beside the summer house. He broke a stem and picked a flower, kneeled down, and proffered it to her, holding it in both hands, head bowed.
"Pity I didn't meet you earlier, White Hare," she murmured, taking the rose from his hands. "Rise."
He stood up.
"Should you change your mind," she said, lifting the rose up to her face, Should you decide, come back to Sintra. I shall be waiting. And your destiny will also be waiting. Perhaps not forever, but certainly for some time longer.
Farewell, Calanthe.
Farewell, Witcher. Look after yourself. A moment ago, I had a foreboding. A curious foreboding. That this is the last time I shall see you.
Farewell, O Queen.
Chapter 5. He awoke and discovered to his astonishment that the pain gnawing at his thigh had vanished. It also seemed that the throbbing swelling which had stretched the skin had stopped troubling him. He tried to reach it, touch it, but could not move. Before he realized that he was being held fast solely by the weight of the skins covering him, a cold, hideous dread ran down to his belly and dug into his guts like a hawk's talons. He clenched and relaxed his fingers rhythmically, repeating in his head, "No, no, I'm not paralyzed."
"You have woken."
A statement, not a question. A quiet but distinct, soft voice. A woman, probably young. He turned his head and groaned, trying to raise himself up.
"Don't move. At least not so vigorously. Are you in pain?"
The coating, sticking his lips together, broke.
"No. The wound isn't. My back.
Bed sores."
An unemotional, cool statement, which did not suit the soft alto voice.
"I shall remedy it. Here, drink this. Slowly, in small sips."
The scent and taste of juniper dominated the liquid. An old method, he thought. Juniper or mint, both insignificant additives, only there to disguise the real ingredients. In spite of that, he recognized suant mushrooms and possibly burdock. Yes, certainly burdock. Burdock neutralizes toxins. It purifies blood contaminated by gangrene or infection.
"Drink. Drink it all up. Not so fast, or you'll choke."
The medallion around his neck began to vibrate very gently. So there was also magic in the draught. He widened his pupils with difficulty. Now that she had raised his head, he could examine her more precisely. She was dainty. She was wearing men's clothing. Her face was small and pale in the darkness.
"Where are we?"
"In a tarmaker's clearing."
Indeed, resin could be smelled in the air. He heard voices coming from the campfire. Someone had just thrown on some brushwood, and flames shot upwards with a crackle. He looked again, making the most of the light. Her hair was tied back with a snakeskin band. Her hair. A suffocating pain in his throat and sternum. Hands tightly clenched into fists. Her hair was red, flame red, and when lit by the glow of the bonfire, seemed as red as vermilion.
"Are you in pain?"
she asked, interpreting the emotion, but wrongly.
"Now, just a moment."
He sensed a sudden impact of warmth emanating from her hands, spreading over his back, flowing downwards to his buttocks.
"We will turn you over," she said. "Don't try it by yourself. You are very debilitated. Hey, can someone help me?"
Steps from the bonfire. Shadows, shapes. Somebody leaned over. It was Jurga.
"How are you feeling, sir? Any better?"
"Help me turn him over on his belly," said the woman. "Gently, slowly. That's right. Good. Thank you."
He did not have to look at her any more. Lying on his belly, he did not have to risk looking her in the eyes. He calmed down and overcame the shaking of his hands. She could sense it. He heard the clasps of her bag clinking, flacons and small porcelain jars knocking against each other. He heard her breath, felt the warmth of her thigh. She was kneeling just beside him.
"Was my wound," he asked, unable to endure the silence, "troublesome?"
"It was a little."
And there was coldness in her voice.
"It can happen with bites, the nastiest kinds of wound. But you must be familiar with it, Witcher."
"She knows. She's digging around in my thoughts. Is she reading them?" "Probably not. And I know why. She's afraid.
Yes, you must be familiar with it, she repeated, clinking the glass vessels again. I saw a few scars on you, but I coped with them. I am, as you see, a sorceress, and a healer at the same time. It's my specialization.
That adds up, he thought. He did not say a word.
To return to the wound, she continued calmly, you ought to know that you were saved by your pulse, fourfold slower than a normal man's. Otherwise you wouldn't have survived, I can say with complete honesty. I saw what had been tied around your leg. It was meant to be a dressing, but it was a poor attempt.
He was silent.
Later, she continued, pulling his shirt up as far as his neck, infection set in, which is usual for bite wounds. It has been arrested. Of course, you took the witch's elixir. That helped a lot, though I don't understand why you took hallucinogens at the same time. I was listening to your ravings, Geralt of Rivia.
She is reading my mind, he thought. Or perhaps Jurga told her my name. Perhaps I was talking in my sleep under the influence of the Black Gull. Damned if I know. But knowing my name gives her nothing. Nothing. She doesn't know who I am. She has no idea who I am.
He felt her gently massage a cold, soothing ointment with the sharp smell of camphor into his back. Her hands were small and very soft.
Forgive me for doing it the old way, she said. I could have removed the bed sores using magic, but I strained myself a little, treating the wound on your leg, and feel none too good. I've bandaged the wound on your leg as much as I am able, so now you're in no danger. But don't get up for the next few days. Even magically sutured blood vessels tend to burst, and you'd have hideous effusions. A scar will remain, of course. One more for your collection.
Thanks.
He pressed his cheek against the skins in order to distort his voice, disguise its unnatural sound.
May I ask, whom should I thank?
She won't say, he thought, or she'll lie.
My name is Visenna.
I know, he thought. I'm glad, he said slowly, with his cheek still against the skins. I'm glad our paths have crossed, Visenna.
Why, it's chance, she said coolly, pulling his shirt down over his back and covering him with the sheepskins. I received word from the customs officers that I was needed. If I'm needed, I come. It's a curious habit I have. Listen, I'll leave the ointment with the merchant. Ask him to rub it on every morning and evening. He claims you saved his life. He can repay you like that.
And me? How can I repay you, Visenna?
Let's not talk about that. I don't take payment from witches. Call it solidarity, if you will. Professional solidarity and affection. As part of that affection, some friendly advice, or, if you wish, a healer's instructions. Stop taking hallucinogens, Geralt. They have no healing power, none at all.
Thank you, Visenna, for your help and advice. Thank you for everything.
He dug his hand out from under the skins and found her knee. She shuddered, put her hand into his and squeezed it lightly. He cautiously released her fingers and slid his down over her forearm. Of course, the soft skin of a young woman. She shuddered even more strongly but did not withdraw her arm. He brought his fingers back to her hand and joined his with hers. The medallion on his neck vibrated and twitched.
Thank you, Visenna, he repeated, trying to control his voice. I'm glad our paths crossed.
Chance,
she said.
But this time there was no coolness in her voice.
Or perhaps destiny?
He asked, astonished, for the excitement and nervousness had suddenly evaporated from him completely.
Do you believe in destiny, Visenna?
Yes,
she replied after a while.
I do.
That people linked by destiny will always find each other, he continued.
Yes, I believe that too. But what are you doing? Don't turn over.
I want to look into your face, Visenna. I want to look into your eyes, and you must look into mine.
She made a movement as though about to spring up from her knees, but she remained beside him. He turned over slowly, lips twisting with pain. There was more light. Someone had put some more wood on the fire. She was not moving now. She simply moved her head to the side, offering her profile.